thank you very much. It's lovely to be back here. I was here, if I remember right, about 6 years ago, 2012. And the crowds just get bigger and bigger. I wish you could do the same up in Dublin, but there we go. So, I'm going to kick off. Thank you very much. I'll kick off with the poem that got me back into writing poetry. I think we all write poems in our teenage years, and they're a bit like pimples and sprouting hair and hormones and things like that. But after a long gap, I came back to writing poetry, and around 1999 I wrote a poem for my mum, because she had, at that stage she had terminal cancer, and she was an avid bird watcher. So I put the two of them together and wrote this, and the long and short of it is it got published in Poetry Ireland and went on to win a competition, and she was delighted with it. But, so it's what got me back writing poetry after a gap of about 15 years. It's entitled Swallows. Scythe wings slide from the low vaults, calling fall low to the line of sight, swing wide and tight to the lawn, race their shadows. Bracing an arc, a long drawn mower's sweep, the light blades wheel and leap at once upward steep, deep in the blue air. Chatter, thrown wide over unplowed winds, they gather high then scatter in heady reels, to sow their sky notes, peals, thin chips of sound, till they halt, crest, fall again low to the ground, and reap the long hours that have grown there over the fields. The seasons turn, the dusk-silted eaves fall dumb, shunned by their feints of leaving, flights in shadow. They weave and scatter at nightfall, gather their numbers, and siding and sweeping the hollows, they harvest in the last sheaves of light. Then they are gone, and with them the summer. We all at some point write a poem about time moving on and how it makes us feel. And I once showed this in a poetry workshop. Maid McGuckin was given, and she said, "Every man writes a poem about a shaving mirror." I don't know how true it is. But it was either that or read out my one about the twin potatoes against the system. So I thought I might go for this one instead. Shaving mirror. The illusion in its concave retina is virtual, magnified, and upright, which shows the treachery of words. Rather say, the image exaggerates with the precision of satire. It is a theatre of parallax, a moving circle centred on the eye, a mercurial portrait to which time, a third-rate artist who can't leave well enough alone, returns morning after morning to rework line and hatching with ever coarser charcoals until the figure is botched once and for all to caricature. This particular one just came out of watching two different and entirely unrelated documentaries. I probably need to get out one more. One of them about, literally, it was many years ago when the Waterford Glass was closing down, there was a thing about glass blown. And the following night, David Attenborough was talking about insects, specifically about a hive and bees and all that. And I kind of put the two of them together for a poem entitled Glass Blower. It is as though an incandescent swarm has clustered on a spindle of his breath to fabricate a hive in the hot globe of amber. The air is given hands, cupping the molten bubble thrown out by his steady lung, crafting the dull red sun until it sets like a premonition of winter into the fragile geometry of glass. Oddly enough, the next one is entitled Wasp. I was twice stung by a wasp. I don't think it was the same wasp, they were 10 years apart. And both times it happened to be in September. So in the aftermath, well, several years after 9/11, that was still in the back of my head, me being stung by a wasp. So I just wrote a poem entitled Wasp, but with 9/11 in the background in my head. if not in the poem. Wasp leaves its paper lantern nest, a painted samurai. September has filled us with the jitters. When it crawls the globe of a pitted windfall, winds fidget to right its stumbling. Its antennae are nerve ends. A humour of the grey air has maddened a venom inside its double-jointed abdomen. Black bile, yellow bile. It can sense the end. Now it turns kamikaze, launching into one last delirious flight. It is fanatic, frenetic, simply dying to fall upon the sword. I live up in Bray, and I'm extremely lucky in that if this is my flat, the toilet there, it sounds terrible, the toilet there is the sea, but that's how close I am. It's lovely. And I don't need a toilet, it's great, let me just go in the sea. No, I don't mean that. It's an inspiring place to live, and a lot of my poetry would be inspired by the sea and seascapes and seafront and all that. And this one is simply entitled Bray Head. Rocks are nouns, hedral, obstinate, but the sea is all verb. Today, the subjunctive mood is on her. She is mites, woods, every kind of conditional. Today's skin is supine. The undertow tenses and dilates. Rack and tackle wither on the shore of last night's imperatives. The sea is all verb. Before her, our pronouns crumble into predicates. Okay. So that was all from the first collection. Came out with Doghouse, a wonderful group, but unfortunately they went out of business very shortly after publishing this. I hope I wasn't responsible. They're a Kerry-based group. That was 2011. And then last year I was very lucky in that Dira Press picked up my second collection. And sticking slightly with the theme of living by the water, but it's not really about that at all. I'm sure a lot of you will remember a terrible image, really, a few years back of Alan Kurdi, a three-year-old whose body washed up on Bodrum Beach in Turkey as part of the exodus across the sea. And a few years before that, I'd been to Bodrum. And on the same trip, I'd been to Gallipoli, and it's a very short story, but in the Gallipoli trenches, there's a statue of this giant Turkish soldier. And what happened was that the trenches were very close to each other, and they actually had kind of respect for each other, the two opposing armies. There was a British officer caught in no man's land, wounded and dying, and he was roaring for half the day in the sun. And this giant Turk just stood up out of the trenches, walked into no man's land, picked him up, brought him over to the British trenches, laid him down and walked back again. So they built a statue to him. And for me, the image of the kid on the beach being picked up by the Turkish Coast Guard and that were somehow in my head when I wrote this particular response to the photo. It's entitled Exodus. What bundle has morning washed up on the shores of the internet? A tiny Gulliver, though silent as stillbirth. A Moses among the bulrushes? Pharaoh has sent his towering guard like the giant of Gallipoli to raise him. Surely, among all the suitcases, empty as grief, that Bob and the Aegean, one can be found to cradle him, to float him onwards. The novel that you mentioned, City of Dis, is a contemporary set in Dublin. But when I was researching to write for it, I'd read Dante's Inferno. It was loosely based on that in terms of structure. And as I'm sure some of you know, in Dante and in Roman mythology, Greek mythology as well, when you die, you wait on one bank of the river Styx for Charon to come, the ferryman, to bring you over to the Hades, where the dead are. And I mentioned my mother dying back in 2000, 2001. Pretty much since then, my dad has slowly declined through Alzheimer's. It'd actually be 90 on Wednesday, believe it or not. But I was sort of relating that to this myth in my head in some way. What does it mean to die slowly of Alzheimer's? And this is entitled Alzheimer's. I've watched those eyes enmeshed in time, abandoned time, and know your mind has wandered down to the nether shore, where year on year you await the hour. Man of sand, a relentless wind is whittling you over to that farther shore, grain after grain, after my mother. Okay. I'm a Capricorn. There's only Capricorns among you, you know. Yeah, we're goats. That's a great thing to be, I think. So this is my poem about being a Capricorn, or being a goat. It's called The Goat. Along with the bells clattering monotony, goat carries its own hot stink of the self-sufficient. A thick pelt thrown like a shag pile over a horse of solid muscle. The slit eye tilts a world made steep, capricious as its own high rock leaps. Insidious, chewing the rough cud of bracken, tin cans, solitude, it bleats out its own thin song of perseverance, as old as Adam. Now, I'm going to bring it briefly to... I have a whole series of very short poems, 7-line poems in this. I call them miniatures. I'll just read one of them. This one is really a vision of the Haveney Bridge in Dublin, which I'm sure all of you know. And I'm a sucker for a pun, and I have to say I'm quietly proud of the last word of this poem, which I think is a killer pun. Okay? The poem is called Cat's Eye. City lights quiver like aspen leaves in the slow licorice river. The wind has shivered a glass half moon into shimmering slivers, into silver elver scribbling under where, cat-like, the Haveney Bridge has overarched its old arch rival. And then I'll finish up with these two. I was always told that they're always the most welcome words you can say in a whole reading. I'll finish up with these two anyway. This is John Walsh, who runs the Repressed Poetry section. It was his favourite poem, so I always feel that I need, in honour of him, to read it out. It's entitled Solstice. December has cut the throat of another day. The light bleeds away westward, dyeing the clouds in briefest reds. For a week, a keen wind has honed the moon to a blade. There's barely a sliver remaining, a white edge that traces an arc haunted by the memory of the old moon. The fields are heavy as remorse. Pools shiver at each splash of air, cower from the senile wind, crust around blackened grasses. Nothing breeds here. Nothing breeds, and yet amidst this baldness, the urgent snout, the darting beak, black leaves, flicked, stabbed, rifled. There's something clandestine abroad, a rumour, solstice, a whispered word. The tidal moon is pregnant with it and cradles in her arc the print of the full. Hedges are raising wicker fingers to sift the zodiac's turning braille for myths of recurrence. Even the frost seems cold only with waiting. It's we that grow old, not the world. All about, nature wheels on axes of return. Our charge is set for a single firing before we fall to ashes. Still we blaze up, red in the knowledge that the mass that governs our span is strictly linear. It carries within it the term of its own decay, implacable as treason. That treason is our glory. I'll finish up on another cheery note. This one from the older collection is entitled Epitaph. These are not days. They are shadows flitting over the too familiar ground, dry and rubble-strewn, where our choices are buried. These are not days, these shades, tremulous, mere changes of light. Quiet as thieves, as witnesses, they slip past in silent region. Count them up and they come to years, but years empty of substance. They are the dry husks of our lives, the whisper inside the hourglass. Days are not the coinage of will as once we imagined. One day they rise like locusts to devour us. Thank you very much. And if anyone is looking to get a copy, I'd be more than delighted to sign and autograph and do anything else that needs to be done. Thanks very much.